Today's scripture is Matthew 21, verses 23 through 32. When he entered the temple, the chief priests and the elders of the people came to him as he was teaching and said, "By what authority are you doing these things? And who gave you this authority?" Jesus said to them, "I will also ask you one question. If you tell me the answer, then I will also tell you by what authority I do these things. Did the baptism of John come from heaven, or was it of human origin?" And they argued with one another. "If we say from heaven, he will say to us, 'Why then did you not believe him?' But if we say of human origin, we are afraid of the crowd, for all regard John as a prophet." So they answered Jesus, "We do not know." And he said to them, "Neither will I tell you by what authority I am doing these things. What do you think? A man had two sons. He went to the first and said, 'Son, go and work in the vineyard today.' He answered, 'I will not.' But later he changed his mind and went. The father went to the second and said the same. And he answered, 'I go, sir.' But he did not go. Which of the two did the will of his father?" They said, "The first." Jesus said to them, "Truly I tell you, the tax collectors and the prostitutes are going into the kingdom of heaven ahead of you. For John came to you in the way of righteousness, and you did not believe him. But the tax collectors and the prostitutes believed him. And even after you saw it, you did not change your minds and believe him." Here ends the reading of the word.
Many years ago, my mother had a doctor who was sort of an old cowboy. Mom said you could sometimes even smell the horse manure on his boots when he came into the office. He smoked and he drank and ate all manner of unhealthy foods. But then he would turn around and tell my mother to stay away from all those things. He would say, "Do as I say, not as I do." Now, granted, my mother's an adult and can understand that a message is still valid, even if it's not followed by the messenger. But imagine how difficult it is for children when they receive mixed messages. The simple truth is, what we say is important, but so is what we do. We see this truth in our scripture reading this morning from the Gospel of Matthew. Jesus tells a story of a father who has two sons. The father asks them to go and work in the field. He goes to the first one, who impudently replies, "No, I'm not going to do it." But a little later, the father looks up from what he is doing and sees that this son is out working in the field. Now his other son, when he went and asked him to work, responded, "Father, nothing would give me greater pleasure than to go out and serve you by working in the fields." Dad smiles, leaves the room, but he comes back 2 hours later to find that this one is laying on the couch watching TRL on MTV and eating Cheetos. "Now think hard," says Jesus. "Which son do you suppose pleased the father more? The one who said no, but then went into action, or the one who politely said yes, but then did nothing?" Will you agree with me when I say that there are some things in this life, maybe some of the most important things, that you cannot know or understand except by doing them? You can't really learn how to dance by hearing a lecture on it. No matter how invigorating the speaker might be, they cannot teach you the Texas two-step with only words. You have to get out on the dance floor, listen to the music, feel the moves, and let the rhythm take over your body. Now, when I was in my senior year in high school, one of our English assignments was to read Macbeth by Shakespeare. It was a major snoozer. Plus, it was right after lunch, which didn't help. But part of the problem was that we were just reading words. Macbeth is a play. It's meant to be acted out, to be performed. Now, as a preacher, I like words. They're fun. I like to work with them, shape, turn a phrase, weave thoughts together like a sculptor with clay. but as a preacher, I am also quite aware, sometimes painfully so, of all the things that my words cannot do. I could describe for you what it was like when Ryan and I sat in Arlington Stadium years ago and saw Nolan Ryan get his 5,000th strikeout. I could recall it with the most vivid detail for you, but if you have never seen baseball played or been in a ballpark, you probably wouldn't get much out of my description. Along the same lines, I could describe for you what the perfect chocolate cake is like, and trust me, I know. I could describe the fluffiness of the cake, the creamy but not too heavy texture of the frosting, but if you've never had cake, then you wouldn't understand what I was talking about. Words cannot put the taste of chocolate in your mouth or the crack of the bat and the cheer of the crowd in your ears. Even the most gifted radio announcer is dependent upon the listeners having seen the game performed, or all play-by-play banter about the game is in vain. Now, I understand there's a certain football team that plays this afternoon around 3 o'clock or so, Dallas something or another. And tomorrow morning, every armchair quarterback around here is going to be able to tell you why they won or lost, what Romo did right or wrong, where T.O. failed or succeeded, and how they would have handled it if they were the coach. But those are all words, philosophy, theory, because not one of them has actually been under the helmet trying to throw or receive the pass with this particular mix of players and time, location, and circumstance. They didn't put their toes on the scrimmage line the prior day, so it's all words. Not unlike Christianity. Now, I'm sure some of you have read books or seen books on major Christian beliefs. I read a boatload of them while I was in seminary. You've probably had people ask you, what do Christians like you believe? What they're trying to find out is, what are you as disciples or your particular brand of Christianity? What do you believe? And there's an implication behind that, that Christianity is mostly a matter of believing. That it is a philosophy of life, a set of intellectual propositions. But Jesus was not a philosopher laying out a system of ideas that you file away and drag out for a test or conversation at a cocktail party. Jesus was a teacher whose life taught what he wanted us to understand. And we love and we follow Jesus not because of what he said, only, but also because of the way he lived, what he did, how he died, and was resurrected. Jesus did not ask us to agree with him. He asked us to follow him. He takes us on a journey, not just towards Jerusalem, but towards truth, toward a kingdom that we could not have entered had he not have said, follow me. Sometimes I wonder if we mislead ourselves a little bit by the way we worship on Sunday morning. Maybe you've noticed that when we gather on Sunday that most of what you do is sitting and listening. I talk, you listen, or at least you try and look like you're listening. Elders pray, you listen. Scriptures read, you listen. Do we thereby give the wrong impression to people about our faith? That it's a passive rather than an active affair? Now, the Christian faith is made known in the world in its performance, by what we do, how we interact, how we treat people, key words being do and act. I have a friend from a previous ministry setting named Jay. He's fun-loving, got a glint of mischief in his eye all the time. He can talk your ear off, or as I've also used the phrase, hold up both ends of a conversation all by himself. I know, because I can do the same. He's loving, he's hospitable, has zest and enthusiasm to share. Some of you have probably heard about a spiritual retreat called the Walk to Emmaus. Well, Jay went on one of those, and it served to further uplift and deepen an already strong spiritual life and a firm commitment to the Christian faith and the Christian walk. Well, one night Jay was in one of the meetings that is a follow-up fellowship that people who've been on these walks have with each other. And there was a speaker there talking about bringing a similar kind of ministry into the Texas prisons. Jay recalls feeling very antsy that night, couldn't sit still in his seat. He was very uncomfortable and yet stirred. Later, it became clear to him that God was calling him to be a part of this jail ministry. Oh, sure, he'd sat in church like you and me and affirmed that being a Christian means loving all of God's children. He'd heard the passage, maybe even read it for himself, where Jesus says that visiting people in prison is another way of showing our love for him. Many people nod their heads to a lot of beliefs. Jay decided that it had to be more than words. So he volunteered to help at a Kairos weekend. Kairos is that prison ministry. Very similar to the Emmaus program, but they bring it in to the prison, to the men or women's prisons that live there. And Jay went back again and again. Sometimes his experiences were so uplifting that he'd be talking about it for days, how someone would say that they couldn't remember how many years it had been since someone gave them fresh baked cookies, and how big, tough, burly man with tattoos from head to toe would break down and cry because of those cookies. Sometimes the experiences weren't quite as wonderful, but God kept calling him back. Then my friend Jay was commissioned as a licensed lay minister and became a volunteer chaplain at the state prison in Palestine. Words were no longer enough. As a preacher, my task is not to be interesting, informative, engaging, or entertaining. Now, true, I hope that my sermons are at least occasionally some of those things, but none of those characteristics, as important as they may be, are the ultimate test of proclamation. The words must be transformed into deeds. Hearers must at last become actors. All that we speak and sing of in this place must affect who we are, must evolve into behavior. The faith which we affirm in this place must be lived in the world. That is the test of my preaching and of our worship together. So tell me, what is our grade? Do we just talk about it here? Or do we go out and do it?